CITR FM 101.9, Vancouver.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community.
Welcome back. Today is Friday, March 31st, and I'm Sydney Soldan.
And I'm Yushan Tsai.
You are listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website citr.ca.
Good evening. It's 5:05 p.m. and time for a full hour of independent campus, local, and international news.
To start the show, we are welcoming MLA candidates in the upcoming BC election for your political party, Joey Doyle and David Stahl, to the studio for an on-air interview.
Following that, we have a report on the parallels between Indigenous and Chinese medicines by News 101 reporter Yusheng Kai.
Following that, we have a report on El Tawhid Jumer Circle or Vancouver Unity Mosque by News 101 reporter Sharon Nadim.
And finally, we have Alex Norman's weekly financial report.
But first, some headlines for today. In campus news, researchers at UBC are using genomics to create cheaper treatments for patients with cystic fibrosis. The study published in Genome Research involved sequencing the genome of Burkholderia, a microbe responsible for life-threatening infections that affect 25 to 50% of people with cystic fibrosis. The hope is that genome sequencing can help researchers find an existing unrelated drug that will control Burkholderia infections. This technique is called repurposing drugs and has been successfully used in the treatment of other diseases, including some cancers. UBC Pharmacy Professor Corey Nisglow says he started this project because the average family can't afford new treatment options for cystic fibrosis. Quote, "It's a heartbreaking issue because these drugs are extremely effective, but they are so expensive," unquote. One in 3,000 people in BC are born with cystic fibrosis, a genetic condition that causes them to have thicker than normal mucus. This can partially or completely block their airway over time, which is why cystic fibrosis patients are especially susceptible to Burkholderia outbreaks. Nisloh hopes his research can help develop effective treatments against the bacteria. Another UBC study has identified specific genes that give varieties of pot their characteristic flavor. The finding published in the journal PLOS ONE is a step toward standardizing different varieties of marijuana. The federal government pledged this week to legalize marijuana by July 1, 2018. This means breeders and growers will have to identify different varieties of cannabis for flavor, effects, and potency. UBC researchers scanned the genome of cannabis plants to identify genes known to be associated with flavor in other plants. The flavors of cannabis are heavily influenced by the presence of a variety of chemical compounds, many of which are found in both wine grapes and cannabis flowers. Jock Bowman, a professor in Michael Smith's laboratory, said, quote, "In the wine industry, grape varieties are highly standardized, but with cannabis, it's a bit of a wild west," unquote, adding, quote, "The plants have all sorts of names, and when it comes to the cannabis, the psychoactive compounds, there is a scary level of variation in potency," unquote. This genomic research is also likely to open the door to identifying genes related to optimal plant size, disease resistance, and other characteristics of interest to commercial growers.
In local news, BC billionaire Jim Pattison has donated $75 million to the St. Paul's Hospital Foundation in Vancouver, the largest donation in Canadian history. The donation will help build the Jim Pattison Medical Center, an 18-acre health campus, which will be built near Main Street and Terminal Avenue in East Vancouver. The new medical center will include the new St. Paul's Hospital, the Provincial Heart Center, the Center for Heart Lung Innovation, the BC Center for Excellence in HIV/AIDS, and other research centers. Patterson is known for using his philanthropy to boost the healthcare system. In the past, he has donated millions to Vancouver General Hospital, Lionsgate Hospital, Surrey Memorial Hospital, and Victoria's Royal Jubilee Hospital. Dick Follet, CEO of the St. Paul's Foundation, said the hospital redevelopment is estimated to cost $1.2 billion, but Patterson's donation will help achieve many of the goals set for the new hospital. Vancouver Councillor Andrea Raymer is introducing a new motion to have signage better reflect the diversity of the city. Her motion prioritizes naming currently unnamed city assets to better reflect Vancouver's ethnic, religious, and gender diversity. It also specifically recognizes Indigenous contributions to the city and directs staff to create specific place naming guidelines that recognize both Indigenous and settler history. These assets would include streets, lanes, plazas, and some buildings, whereas schools, parks, and libraries are named through a separate process. Raymer pointed out that the city has lagged behind when it comes to recognizing the contributions of women, minorities, and Indigenous communities. For example, Vancouver unveiled its first street named after a Chinese Canadian just last year, despite the over 100-year history of the Chinese community in the city. Raymer added, quote, "I want to live in a city where that history isn't erased and is made visible again," end quote. This motion is part of Canada's 150th anniversary celebrations and Vancouver's commitment to, quote, "significantly advance reconciliation," end quote.
In international news, two women were killed after Cyclone Debbie hit Australia. Two women have died and many more are feared to have drowned as two Australian states are hit by floods in the wake of Cyclone Debbie. The body of a woman who disappeared from an area just south of the Queensland border on Thursday was found by a family member. The second victim died after the car she was in was swept away. Both incidents occurred in New South Wales. The storm has since moved out to sea after making landfall on Tuesday. Tens of thousands of residents have been evacuated from northern New South Wales and southern Queensland. In many towns, floodwaters are continuing to rise after the Category 4 cyclone saw some areas experience three times their average monthly rainfall on Thursday alone. In Queensland, the Gold Coast and other nearby regions have received between 10 cm and 30 cm of rainfall in just 2 days, officials said. Canada and Britain are holding informal trade talks ahead of Brexit. Even though Britain is barred from direct negotiations before it formalizes its Brexit divorce from the European Union, it has been holding informal free trade talks with Canada. International Trade Minister Franco-Philippe Champagne said on Thursday that Canada isn't breaking any EU rules by doing that. Champagne said he's met three times with his British counterpart, Liam Fox. Quote, "We are working, respecting established rules, pursuant to EU law as well, but we are having informal talks with our British partners," unquote. The minister told the Senate Trade Committee on Thursday. Champagne's comments echo what Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said earlier this week, that Canada will continue to look for ways to deepen economic ties with Britain after it leaves the EU. Britain is Canada's largest trading partner in Europe, with London serving as a major gateway to the continent. Canada and Britain will become free trade partners in the coming month, regardless when Canada ratifies the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement with the EU. Because Britain remains a party to all EU treaties before its Brexit is finalized.
Those are your campus, local, and international headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more contributor segments.
People, let me tell you. Become a CITR member and make some new friends.
Members get discounts in Kitsilano and around UBC at The Book Warehouse, Stormcrow Ale House, The Australian Boot Company, Fresh's Best Salsa and Company, Banyan Books and Sound, Tapestry Music Limited, Rufus Guitar Shop, Dentry's Irish Grill, the UBC Bookstore, On the French Hair Design, and the Bike Kitchen.
What would we do without our friends?
Welcome back. We now welcome MLA candidates in the upcoming BC election for your political party, Joey Doyle and David Stahl, to the studio for an on-air interview with News Co-Director Andrew Seal.
Thank you for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Could you just start by introducing yourselves a little bit and telling us about YPP?
Yeah, sure. So my name is David, and I'm running for the Vancouver Point Grey riding. I'm a student here at UBC studying political science, and I'm running with the Your Political Party. Your Political Party is a party focused on legally binding campaign promises, absolute government transparency, and using scholarly, peer-reviewed sources in the policymaking process. That kind of part, that part's kind of more my specialty. And we're focused on using new forms of technology to increase voter turnout and participation across British Columbia and really get people involved in politics while focusing on sustainability both economically, economically, socially, and environmentally.
Yeah, I'm Joey Doyle. I'm running in the Vancouver Fairview riding. And well, David kind of talked about, I think, some of the most of the major points behind YPP's philosophy. But really, I'm running because I, too, feel a lot of the frustration that I think that a lot of people in British Columbia have with their government and a lot of people have around the world with the way that our political systems are structured, the way that they are, they feel very exclusive and they feel like they're disempowering to people. And really, YPP is founded on that, on a collaborative approach to government and involving people actively in decisions that affect their lives rather than just having one vote every 4 years as their only meaningful way of interacting with government. And I think that needs to change. And so I think that's why we're out here.
So how did YPP actually start and how big is it now?
Yeah, this is actually our 15th anniversary. Mm-hmm. So it was started by the party leaders. It was a guy named James Filippelli when he was a student around our age, about 15 years ago at Langara. And he, I think even back then, he felt a lot of the frustration that people are feeling and were feeling.
Mm-hmm. And 15 years later, we're still in the same position.
Yeah. So, the most we've ever run is two candidates before. We've got seven in this coming election. So I think we're on the right track. And I think a lot of people are interested in and receptive to our idea and what needs to change.
So what do you actually think are the biggest problems with the current political system? I know you said that, democracy should be more than one vote every 4 years, but like, how should it work then?
Well, voting seems very alien to most people simply because of that. And our political structure that we have isn't really helping alleviate this sort of circumstance. It's really leading to a sense of apathy. The way we vote for our politicians. If you weren't of the majority or even the largest minority of voters, then your voice is kind of silenced, and that makes people not really feel like it's worth participating. So they kind of distance themselves from politics, and they distance themselves from representing even themselves. So they try to live in Canada as an individual without without getting the benefits of a full-on democracy.
Yeah, so, I mean, what YPP is founded on, one of the things that we've done is we have an online open policy platform where anybody can go on to our website, yourbc.ca, and you can go and participate in this platform. And just this past week, we had our first vote to our membership to implement policy. So this policy started in this online policy discussion. It was put through a series of votes through the membership and the the party, the candidates, and so all members of YPP voted to pass this policy, and it's now you can see it on our website. So we've implemented things like tying welfare and disability to inflation, to what else did we implement in this?
Oh gosh, so many things.
Oh, free transit proposal is a huge one. So lots of these things, and they're all coming from our membership. They're not coming from a bunch of us, like mm-hmm. the leaders sitting around in a room and thinking what's best. It's people who've actually gone and said, we want this, and then now we're trying to accomplish those goals.
So you've been using Reddit as a platform to discuss and develop your platform, correct?
In part. We're really using it because it's an easy tool to listen to the people. It's not what we intend to use if elected. If elected, we're going to be making platforms or an online sort of forum for members of our constituency to vote on issues. We're using Reddit right now because it's easy and because it captures lots of opinions pretty well.
And so as your party grows, and if you're using this kind of online platform, how would you manage and moderate potentially having thousands of people all trying to give their opinions and, support or lack of support for certain things all at the same time?
Well, I'm not a computer scientist. I'm a political science student. That means that I understand that it's important to listen to people who have good ideas and more importantly, listen to ideas that many people also agree with. So it's not my job to find out how that's going to happen. It would be my job to listen to the right types of people to help facilitate this to happen.
I mean, there is precedent. Like the Pirate Party of Iceland, for instance, has implemented this exact method where people go onto their website and post things that they want the government to do. There's a like a discussion aspect to it. There's the voting aspect, and then eventually they can implement that as part of the official government policy. So I mean, I don't think it's that crazy of an idea to suggest to what we're suggesting in this way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all vote, or I don't vote for American Idol, but because I don't watch American Idol. But the fact that a TV
got
show
got canceled.
Oh, see, but the fact that we have the capacity to do this, even for something like just pure entertainment, means that the capacity to do it in a way that is actually meaningful to everyone's everyday life, it can be done and not as difficult as people might think.
So then how do you decide what gets discussed and like in what order? Like how do you prioritize so many issues? Because obviously there's a lot of things, I assume, that you think should change. Which is the point of the party, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how, yeah, like where do you start, really?
I think it's what people want to talk about, what's on people's mind. Obviously, something we've seen a lot of is people who are concerned about affordable housing, who are concerned about education at all levels, who are concerned about holding government accountable, all these kinds of things. And there's so many other issues that we could talk about, but it's... it's what's on people's mind. I think that naturally what we end up prioritizing is the things that people care about and things that people want action to be taken on.
It's not what we prioritize. It's what you prioritize and tell us to prioritize.
So say, yeah, so like affordable housing, say I'm concerned about that. I raise it in the forum or the platform. What happens then? Like take me through the process.
Yeah, so you go on, you post it onto our online policy platform. Then other YPP members or members of the public who are participating in this process, they go and they talk to you about it. They post their own thoughts on it. And then eventually, if there's enough support, you submit to have this put towards the party membership to be voted on and to implement into the official party policy. And so right now it's a pretty simple process just because we're trying to make it as accessible and open as possible. Definitely some of that, the more steps would need to be worked out in the future. But I think right now it's just about getting people, making it accessible.
Mm-hmm. And with growth, capacity will also increase too. So it shouldn't be much of a problem.
And so, yeah, what kind of people are you finding that are becoming interested in the your political party at this time?
Oh, everyone from all walks of life. The main thing that they all share, though, is just a general disillusionment with the way that we are governing ourselves right now. And they see inefficiencies all around. They see people being marginalized, and they just want to be treated equally and have the full on power of democracy with them instead of this quasi version that we're starting to drift towards.
So using the internet as a means to bring people together and discuss and I guess figure out how to act on various issues. How is there any means of incorporating the voices of people who may not use the internet, even though it is the best way to get mass communication? But what about maybe older people? How can they still contribute if they're not as internet literate?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that has been a concern of ours for a while. And we have talked a lot about implementing like phone lines for people who have access to phones but not necessarily to internet technology, as well as obviously going out into the community and actually going to talk to people, us taking that initiative. So we haven't implemented the phone line yet, but certainly it's something that's on our mind because I agree that there are a lot of people who are the most unrepresented who don't have access to the means to participate in online forums. And definitely as we grow and create more party infrastructure, we can create more infrastructure to facilitate that conversation.
Mm. But it's in the end, it will still require people to go out and reach out in person to these people who don't have access, such as the elderly and especially actually the homeless populations. It's important to go and talk to them. They're people just like everyone else, and you need to hear what they have to say, even if they don't have access to the formal ways.
Absolutely. So since the intention is to base all policies on evidence and, I guess, research, can you really then place yourselves on the traditional political spectrum?
Not really, no.
No. We explicitly are off it.
Nice. I noticed that you guys emphasize this triple sustainability. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So when conducting ourselves, we want to be mindful of what we're doing in terms of economic sustainability, social sustainability, and environmental sustainability. We don't want to undertake anything that can affect people's quality of life negatively and irreparably. That includes pipelines, the environmental damage. I mean, we have an energy platform that is trying to be more environmentally friendly than the other political parties' platforms on that. And same is going for economic sustainability and social sustainability. We want to raise the quality of life for people across BC in terms of their access to civil services, and just general enjoyment of life.
So when does any category within this sustainability model take precedence, or do all categories have to be satisfied in order to proceed with the policy, like environmental, economic, and
social?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're all the guiding principles of the party. And so all of our policy and all of the decisions that we make need to be taking these into account. And the reason is not just to say, like, we've checked the box and we're thinking of the environment, thinking of society, thinking of the economy. But because without being sustainable in these three ways, then our society itself is not sustainable, right? So the idea is that if we want to prosper in British Columbia and create a society, as David said, where people have high qualities of life and that we can continue to live here without rampant levels of pollution and without rampant levels of poverty, then we need to actively be making decisions that are fostering a long-term sustainability in these fields. So definitely all of our policy needs to fulfill all of those criteria.
So since we're on UBC campus right now, what do you plan to do for students specifically, and why do you think it's in the interest of students to vote for YPP?
Where to start? So we want to implement free public transit and increase the capacity for public transit. That would obviously help students, most of which commute. And that would make it so that people can come to school and be better at being a student. And we want to make it so that, I would like to make it so that the students are more involved directly into the provincial politics. Students are typically seen as some of the most politically active people, but here at UBC, that's not really the case. Universities are largely publicly funded, if you're going to think about student loans as a form of public funding, but also a lot of the research and facilities are provided by the government. So we really need to bridge the gap between the worlds of academia and the worlds of government so that we can get all of these bright minds to contribute to building a better world. And right now, they're not seeing all of the things that they're doing be transferred into policy. So understandably, they're a little bit upset and a little bit apathetic. So if we can show other students that what they have to say matters and what they have to say can contribute in a positive way, then we can really increase the ability for students to have a better quality of life and feel fulfilled.
Yeah, and I mean, just to continue on that, like, I think a lot of people our age feel very much that sense of disillusionment that that's the reason and I'm running in the first place, and because a lot of my friends have this sense where it's like, okay, nothing really has an effect in terms of the conventional ways of interacting with our governments. And so even beyond all of that, I think just trying to change politics into a way that intuitively a lot of people and students understand as being more fair and more inclusive seems to make a lot of sense.
And it takes just a few people to start that movement. You need a few people to demonstrate to the rest of the student population that change can be made. And if you just break that critical mass, you'll get everyone else to realize that they're not alone in thinking this way and that they too can contribute. And if you get enough of those people all acting on their own personal values, then you can get some serious change.
So do you have chapters in other provinces or federally?
Not yet.
Coming up.
Hopefully soon.
We'll see what we...
So I just have one more question before we wrap up here. I just kind of got thinking about it. So if you have something like you want to make public transit free, right? So where do you make up for that loss of revenue? And how do you decide that? Because, say, you know, one idea, maybe the evidence would say, let's just tax people who drive or tax gas or, you know, fuel, whatever. But then that might be the best thing, you know, supported by science, just for an example. But then maybe a huge portion of the population is against that because maybe they don't take public transit or they want to drive or whatever. Like, how do you address that?
Well, a lot of people first say no to an idea because they don't fully understand how it can happen. With making public transit free, it sounds like it's going to cost a lot of money, but in reality, there's a lot of money to be saved by doing that. For instance, you're going to be decreasing the amount of people who are driving, and that means that there's going to be less traffic, and so probably less accidents, but also less road wear, so you'll have to invest less in public infrastructure. You'll also be making it so that because there's less cars, buses can get places faster. And that means that people can get to work faster and they can work longer if they feel they need to. Or they can spend it on leisure time. They can go out to a restaurant. They can go spend money that way. And it also will be increasing property value around transit centers, which are often where businesses are. So you're increasing the revenue from sales and even advertising within metro, like train stations and bus loops. So there's many different avenues for making up this money that people won't necessarily think about at first.
Yeah, but I see your point in terms of if there's something that the evidence might support or that some people might think is a good idea and other people don't, or that's difficult to reconcile. But I think ultimately if we're going to be successful as a society, we need to work on implementing systems that allow for consensus to be formed rather than creating stark divisions that just polarize people. And we've seen in one, at least one notable example, how these stark polarizations end up, which is not a good place. And it's not a place that I think anyone wants British Columbia to end up in. So even if there's disagreements, we'd rather deal with them in terms of kind of a good faith consensus building rather than anything else.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Do you have any closing thoughts or statements to the audience?
Yeah. So if you'd like to vote in the upcoming provincial elections, there will be voting here in the nest. I always want to call it the sub. Still used to the old one. So they'll be voting here in the nest. On early voting will be on April 28th, and general voting will be on May 9th. However, you can also vote by mail if you're going to be out of the province or just away.
And we're also having our campaign kickoff event on April 8th at One Athletes Way in Olympic Village. So if you want to learn more about the party and meet either of us or any of the other candidates, come on out. We'd love to have you. And feel free to get in touch with us on our Facebook pages or our website, yourbc.ca.
Oh, and also you can come find me at Block Party.
All right. Thanks for joining us, guys, and good luck in the election.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Joey and David. Next up, we have a report on the parallels between Indigenous and Chinese medicines by News 101 reporter Yusheng Kai.
But first, we are going to take a quick PSA break. Stay tuned for more contributor segments.
Hold of some pigskin. This is my shimmering life prize. All I must do is create a diversion. What could distract people who love sports? Sports! 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 Sports!
Do you find sports distracting? Feel the need to chant sports for hours on end? Then come on by the CITR station at the new sub to get involved. We do play-by-play, color commentary, audio production, interviews, and so much more. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to News 101, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us. Now we have Yusheng Kai's report on the parallels between Indigenous and Chinese medicines.
For years. In her Olivia Jim has been off her land for years. In her deep memories, she still remembers the garden where her late grandma grew plants.
Out of the backyard garden that we had, she had her own medicines, made her own tea and everything. And
Olivia is an Indigenous woman who believes herself has Asian blood. When she was at Chinatown, a lady talked to her in Chinese and was adamant that Olivia was from China too.
Yeah, so I was down in the parking, I was looking for parking to go to, because I like going down to Chinatown too with my aunties and one of my mom to go and just take a look at the different shops down there. And the time when she thought I was Asian, and she was asking me like a lot of questions, or maybe she was new. She asked me for directions or something, but I had no idea, and I didn't know what to say.
She later found, not only do they share similar appearance, Indigenous people practice similar medical treatment as Chinese do.
We use like devil's club, dandelion, anything that was naturally outside, and then the same with the Chinese doctor, she did the same thing.
In the lower mainland, Several indigenous organizations, like the Helping Spirit Lodge where Olivia works, have had traditional Chinese medicine practitioners into their communities. Even across Canada, First Nations like the Crees of the Waskaganish have had traditional Chinese medicine workshops. Anne Severed from the Cree First Nation has turned to traditional Chinese medicine for half a year. Not eating very healthily, Anne has had some problems with her digestive system. She has been using Western medicine for years, but is afraid of being over-medicated.
Right now I've been using Westernized medicine, and I want to get away from the prescriptions that, you know, the doctor gives me. I'd rather work with the more natural, which is, you know, Chinese traditional medicine and Indian medicine.
But being raised away from her reserve, Anne has little knowledge about indigenous way of medical treatment. However, she hopes to use indigenous medicine as well, if possible.
I'd definitely like to experience that. But the thing is, I don't have that connection right now to anybody that is using Indian medicine. Vancouver is such a huge urban organization.
No access to indigenous medicine is not only Anne's concern. Lillian Antelope feels the same way. As an indigenous woman, Lillian hopes there could be knowledge keepers among their community to promote indigenous medicine.
I'm from Cranbrook. There's no, people will go out and they'll pick herbs or something and they'll use it for personal use, but you don't go and see anybody. Do you know what I'm saying? You just know what to go and get, or you ask somebody what to go and get. But they don't have a lot of practitioners going around. I totally enjoy Chinese medicine. I've noticed great benefit. And I believe in long-standing traditional medicines. Getting back to Aboriginal medicine, if I knew more about it, and I think that knowledge, like I said, if someone has it, I don't know who does, like from where I come from, would have been great.
Working for her Indigenous people for years, Olivia has two dreams. One is to document Aboriginal medical treatment. The other is to take a blood test. She wants to know how many percentage of her blood is from across the ocean.
I would have really, if I ever got to meet them, I would have loved to meet them. Obviously, I wasn't born or anything, so. And then growing up in the west side of Vancouver, going to Eric Hamber Secondary School, I graduated from there, and I told people I'm First Nations, but they didn't believe me because they thought I was of Asian, just because everyone was all of Asian descent, and I was the one who was a mixed blood of half of being part Asian and part Native. So.
Thank you, Yusheng. Now we have a report on El Tawid Juma Circle, or Vancouver Unity Mosque, a progressive mosque in the heart of Vancouver that welcomes LGBTQ members and allows women to lead the prayers. Our reporter, Sharon Nadim, visited the mosque and talked to Nasser, a longtime member. Here's his story.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين.
Nasser is reciting a traditional Islamic prayer at the weekly prayer meeting of El Tawhid Jamaa Circle or Vancouver Unity Mosque.
El Tawhid Jamaa Circle, it's a group of people that believe in bringing people together to build a Muslim community based on the purity of Islam.
The group practices what they call egalitarian and inclusive Islam that doesn't discriminate based on gender or sexuality. Their aim is to create safe spaces for anybody who wishes to attend. Men and women pray together and anybody can lead prayer.
You could come in a red, green, blue, yellow hair, whatever you want to come. You want to be cross-dressed, you want to come as a she, if you're a he, or a he, if you're a she. Whatever way you want, you'll be accepted. There's no judgment.
While Muslims do pray at home, Nasser says that praying in a group is essential in Islam.
Prayers in general are always have double to triple effect when you are in a group. They always, since I've been a kid, I've always heard that the sense of praying with a group of people, it's always, I find it to be, have a better meaning. Doesn't mean that your prayer at home alone are not counted. It's just you feel that you are, as a group, doing something beautiful, creating peace.
Nasser has been coming every week since the inception of the mosque back in 2012. He is now a proud queer Muslim, but his journey to this point hasn't been easy.
It took me a long time. It actually took me a long time. I only felt comfortable when I had a partner at one time, and I always felt off when I didn't have a partner. Till I started reading the Quran. In the Quran, there's a couple of surahs that says that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created us in the way He wants us, and He never give up on us. And then we turn around and then we bash ourselves by saying, oh, I'm gay, I'm not His creation. And this one day, and that happened one day, it's actually in a conversation with my mother. We were in the car and she was telling me before that, oh, with all the creation of God and we're all the same and all that. So she said, oh, when are you going to change? And I told her, Mom, let me ask you this question. Didn't you just say that we are all the same? She said, yes. I told her, didn't I hear you just saying that we are all His creation and He loves us the same way? She said, yes. I told her, why are you expecting me to change? Then you're telling me I'm not His creation. And she said, no, that's not right. You're His creation. I told her, so? Why are you rejecting me? And since then, I've noticed that I've been rejecting myself. And the fear that because of the community and because of what I've seen outside, I've put myself I imprisoned myself to say, oh, I can't love myself because I'm gay and I'm not worthy of God's love.
Nasser came to Canada from Lebanon more than 25 years ago. Over the years, him and his family have come to accept who he is. He says learning to love himself allowed him to accept love into his life.
I struggled a lot. I'm now lucky that I have a wonderful spouse I adore. He's amazing. And I have an amazing family, and I have a very loving mother and a great community, and I'm involved in the community.
He hopes that communities like the El Tawheed Jama'ah Circle that he helps in fostering will challenge the dominant narrative in the Western world of a violent and repressive religion.
If there's communities that based on just the purity of Islam, and everybody's allowed in, and everybody's able to be themselves, regardless of religion, regardless of denomination, regardless who is the imam, you build a strong community where you can change the way that Islam has been portrayed, especially since 2011. Because Islam is a religion of love. It's not about hatred. It's not about terrorism.
There is certainly a lot of love between each member of the community, referring to each other as family. El Tawheed Circle welcomes every new member with compassion, empathy, and understanding, which Nasser says are the basic teachings of Islam.
It's nice to feel that you're not alone. And there's people like you that feel the same way, and you can at least create a bond, spoken or unspoken, between each other just by being there. That's what.
Thank you, Sharon. Now to close the show, we have Alex Norman's weekly financial report.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Welcome back. Now we have Alex Norman's weekly financial report.
This is the weekly financial update report with Alex Norman, keeping you updated with what's going on in the markets. These are this week's top stories for Thursday, March 23rd to Thursday, March 30th, 2017. Air Canada files a lawsuit against Airbus over 2015 Halifax crash. Lululemon shares lose more than 20% of its value on a sales drop warning. Britain unveils great repeal bill. And Dollarama Inc. quarterly profits beat analyst estimates. We begin this week's news with Air Canada's announcement on Thursday that they have filed a lawsuit against Airbus SAS. In a statement of claim in a Nova Scotia Supreme Court, Air Canada said the French aircraft manufacturer failed to identify shortcomings of the Airbus 320. Air Canada Flight 624 hit the ground about 200 meters short of the runway just after midnight on March 29, 2015, as approached gusty winds and heavy snowfall. Air Canada is claiming that the airplane manufacturer failed to incorporate a warning system to alert pilots to deviate from the planned flight path. Airbus did not immediately return the request for comments on Thursday and has yet to file a statement in defense. Shares in Air Canada closed on Thursday at $13.83 a share for a 4.69% gain for the week. Did you hear Lululemon's warning? Investors sure didn't like it. Shares in Lululemon Athletica sank to its lowest level in more than a year on Thursday after the Canadian yoga wear maker warned of its first quarter sales would fall. Lululemon stock tumbled more than 22.5% to $51.31 US as multiple brokers cut their target price and rating. Analysts and investors were surprised when it was announced that there would be a sudden collapse in Lululemon's post-holiday sales. A disappointing product assortment in the first quarter resulted in weaker online sales and fewer shoppers in stores, said a Lululemon executive during a conference call to analysts. CITC cut its ratings from buy to neutral, and Wells Fargo cut its rating from outperform to market perform. Shares in Lululemon closed on Thursday at $50.73 a share for a 19.53% loss for the week. It's official, the Brits are out. On Wednesday, Prime Minister Theresa May formally notified Brussels of Britain's intentions to leave the EU after more than 40 years of membership. On Thursday, May set out how they would intend to navigate the complex legislative web by initially converting the entire body of the EU laws into British law, a step seen by many critics of the plan as a necessity for businesses trading across the EU borders. The plan centers around a Great Repeal Bill due to be laid out before Parliament in the month of May. The bill will transpose EU laws, repeal the 1972 European Communities Act, officially ending Britain's EU membership, and will give Britain the power to change existing laws to make sure they work after Britex. Quote, the bill will convert EU laws into United Kingdom laws, allowing businesses to continue to operate knowing the rules have not changed overnight, said Britex Minister David Davis. How far can you stretch a dollar? Dollarama Inc.'s quarterly profits beat analyst estimates as the average amount a customer spent in the store increased, sending shares in the Canadian discounter retailer to record highs on Thursday. The Montreal-based company said a rise in sales was aided by a 7.8% increase in the average checkout bill. Sales jumped to 11.5% to $854 million, beating analyst estimates of $846 million. Dollarama, which increased its price ceiling to $4 last year, said total sales also benefited from new products being offered in the fourth quarter. Shares in Dollarama closed on Thursday at $110.88 a share for a 12% gain for the week. Turning to the global markets, these are this week's numbers. Toronto's S&P TSX Composite Index was up this week with a gain of 0.93% to close at 15,578 points on Thursday. The broader S&P 500 index closed higher this week with a gain of 0.98% to close at 2,368 points. The Nasdaq closed on Thursday with a gain of 1.67% for the week. In the European markets, the German DAX closed up 1.8%. In the Asian indices, the Japanese Nikkei posted a gain of 0.45% and the Shanghai Composite was up 0.8% for the week. In the commodities market, the May gold futures closed up this week at $1,241 an ounce. May crude futures were up 5.41% for the week to close at $50.19 a barrel. In natural gas, April future contracts were up 2.68% to close at $3.21 a unit. In the bond market, yields for 10-year Canadian bonds are currently at 1.637%. U.S. 10-year Treasury yields closed lower this week at a rate of 2.414%. This has been the weekly financial update report with Alex Norman, keeping you updated with what's going on in the markets.
Thank you, Alex. That's our program for March 31st. Today's newscast was brought to you by talented volunteer efforts. If you would like to share your comments, get involved, or give us an important news tip, contact us through our Facebook, Twitter, or email us at news@citr.ca.
You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/radio/news/101. You can also find great content on our SoundCloud and Mixcloud pages. For more independent news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. Today's broadcast was produced by Sahar Asaf and Andrew Seal. From the entire news team at CITR, thank you for listening.
Cages aren't locked. Careful when the animals talk. They never lie. They never lie. And the questions that you've been asking may need no reply. I've not been clear. Since the flooding, it's been a little muddy around here. Our zookeeper, she's all but disappeared. The water's receding and the creatures need feeding. But careful, those cages aren't locked. Careful when the animals talk, they never lie. Careful when the animals talk, 'cause they never lie.
makes noise for Tristan Wheeler and Jack Lamming. CITR Radio Pizza Party. What do you do?
Yeah.
What not? Make it louder. Make it louder.
Woo!
I'm hungry. Let's start the show.
Welcome to